Hello and welcome to More or Less. We're your weekly guide to the numbers all around us in the news and in life. And I'm Tim Harford. And this week, wow, some good news for a change. That is not very on brand for 2020.
U.S. drug maker Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech have announced their coronavirus vaccine is more than 90% effective in preventing the disease.
But just how good is it? Should we be getting excited? Some people are definitely urging caution.
I just want to be clear to the House. We do not have a vaccine yet, but we are one step closer. There are many steps still to take.
And for the sofa statisticians out there who hear a number on the news and are immediately sceptical, what does this vaccine trial really tell us? There are dozens of research teams, both in universities and pharmaceutical companies, scrambling to find a vaccine for COVID-19. But it's not just about developing one that you think might work. You need to run a series of experiments, culminating in what's known as a Phase 3 clinical trial, where you test to see if it works in a big group of people. Without a successful Phase 3 trial, the US authorities, and indeed many other regulators, will not let you deploy the vaccine. So, clinical trials are important, really important. They need to be designed correctly, run with the highest standards, and at the end, fully reported. Recently, we heard about the Pfizer and BioNTech vaccine. It was a classic trial with two groups of people, one lot who'd get the vaccine, and the other would get a placebo. Jennifer Rogers is Vice President of the Royal Statistical Society in the UK, and she also works for FASTAR, a consultancy which specialises in analysing clinical trials.
About 20,000 people have received the vaccine, and the other 20,000 people have been in our placebo-controlled group.
Pfizer decided that the trial would run until 164 people contracted COVID-19 by just going about their daily lives. Then, independent researchers would analyse whether the vaccine had actually worked. If most of the 164 cases with COVID turn out to be the ones who didn't get the vaccine, then the research suggests the vaccine would work. Pfizer gave themselves the target that their vaccine would prevent 30% of coronavirus cases. We haven't got to this 164 case endpoint. But after 94 cases of COVID-19 were reported among the volunteers on the trial, researchers carried out a review to see if the vaccine was having any effect.
We were expecting a little bit more of our data. What we actually saw was 90%. So absolutely smashed the targets, really. 90%, over 90% vaccine effectiveness. And that's big news. That's really, really surprising.
So what does this mean?
At most, 8 people in the vaccine group out of those 20,000 got coronavirus, compared with at least 86 people in the placebo group who got coronavirus. The results were just so overwhelming that actually we've now got enough evidence to go to the FDA straight away and say that this vaccine does work. It seems to be protective against coronavirus, and they're going to hopefully be able to get it licensed and get it manufactured and get it distributed as quickly as possible.
This is one of those rare occasions when learning more about the intricacies of the numbers is more reassuring than what you might hear in the news, although we do still have to bear in mind that there may be limitations.
We just have this overall effect of it's 90% effective. We don't know whether or not that's constant throughout all the different age groups. We know, for example, that coronavirus is really dangerous to older generations if they get it. What we really need to know is this vaccine as effective in the older generations or more effective in the older generations than the younger generations?
The vaccine needs 2 doses to be effective. What might this mean for results? And it looks safe so far, but we'd want to keep checking over a longer time period in case problems emerge. Only a limited amount of data has been published so far from this study. We need to see a lot more to understand the potential and limitations. But this seems like very positive news. Just before we go, we thought we'd bring you a little statistical smorgasbord of some of the claims that came up during and after the US election. Here with me is Charlotte McDonald to run through a few of them quickly. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello. Hi.
So, yes, tell us, what have you found?
Well, in the aftermath of the US election on November 3rd, there have been various claims made online and by President Trump that there's been a lot of electoral fraud. Various posts appeared purporting to show data that proved this. Among the most common claims was the idea that more ballots were counted than there were people registered to vote.
And did they have any evidence to back up these claims, or were they just completely spurious?
Well, some of these were almost plausible mistakes. People came across outdated voter registration data online, not realising or not wanting to realise it was out of date, and then compared it to the votes cast.
So there had been some attempt at finding actual numbers, but they just got it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. For example, one table shared on Facebook showed voter turnout at being over 100% for a handful of key states that both Biden and Trump were keen to win. For example, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona.
Do we know the correct voter turnout for these states?
Yeah, voter turnout ranged between 65 and 76% in those states. Perhaps a slightly more risible effort at looking up numbers is this one. And to be honest, we're not sure if it was supposed to be a joke.
Well, go on.
Well, we saw one tweet from someone who claimed that millions more people voted in the state of Georgia than actually lived there, which obviously would be very suspicious if true. But it turns out they were looking at the population of less than 4 million for the country of Georgia, rather than the population of about 10 million for the American state of Georgia.
Oh dear. Well, let's hope it was a joke.
Yeah, and as well as individual states, what's known as the popular vote came under scrutiny. The total number of votes cast for Biden and Trump from all the states added together.
Hasn't Joe Biden got the highest number of votes ever in a US presidential election?
Yeah, exactly. Currently around 76 million, while Trump got 8 million more votes than last time with around 71 million. Now, some commentators have said that Biden's high number is suspicious. But it's widely agreed that voter turnout was high in this election. And of course, as time passes, the population of the US goes up. So it's not surprising there were more votes cast than ever before.
But we know that these claims have got traction with other social media users and that they are feeding this general narrative of fraud.
Yeah, but as many media outlets keep emphasising in their coverage, there doesn't seem to be any evidence of widespread fraud. And another big topic that people have been discussing endlessly online was how badly pollsters had done, again. And I know you've been looking at polling from this election.
Well, I have. I wrote about it in the Financial Times. And we've been on a bit of a roller coaster because before the election, the polls suggested that Joe Biden would win comfortably. And then on election night, it looked like a real nail biter. And now most of the postal votes have been counted. It turns out it was a solid enough win for Biden in the end.
So the polls were right after all?
Well, no, the polls were off, often by 3 or 4 points. It just didn't change the result. The polls said Biden would narrowly lose in Iowa, Ohio and Texas, and actually he solidly lost in those states. They said he would win fairly comfortably in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin and Michigan, but his victories there were much closer. It was Florida that was the big swing state where the polls put Biden ahead, but Trump won comfortably. What's uncomfortable for the pollsters is that the polls were systematically wrong in much the same places and by much the same amount as in the 2016 election. They really don't want to be wrong twice in exactly the same fashion.
And what's the lesson?
Well, for me, the lesson is that we need to restrain our expectations. Polling's hard and lots of the individual state races are quite close. And we want certainty, but in a tight race, the opinion polls can't give us that.
Well, thank you, Tim.
And thank you, Charlotte. And that is all we have time for this week. But if you'd like to get in touch, please email moreorless@bbc.co.uk. We'll be back next week. And until then, goodbye.
This is the BBC World Service, where Catty Kay and Carlos Watson bring us a radio and podcast series.
I'm Catty Kay. I'm a British journalist in America.
And I'm Carlos Watson, and I'm an American journalist in America. We're going to be looking at some of the hottest issues facing Americans right now.
Thinking about where America is coming from and where it's going to.
Meeting the game changers and change makers
when Catty met Carlos.
At bbcworldservice.com. And in an hour, join Nikki Beatty for the Arts Hour.
With not one, but three Oscar-winning actors. Matthew McConaughey on his relationship with Hollywood, Octavia Spencer on putting her boiled eggs to work, and Kristin Scott Thomas on how she overcame horrible discouragement. All that, plus prima ballerina Tamara Rojo.
This is the BBC World Service, the world's radio station.